This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome into the Gabe Kuhn Show. I am Connor Dunning. Filling in for Gabe Kuhn while he's out, you can find me at cdunning929 on X and Twitter. I'm also over on Blue Sky. Just search Connor Dunning. And I should pop up. Massive show today. Massive show. Very, very busy sports weekend for the 901. We're going to open on the Tigers. Lost to Arkansas State and then get into the Grizzlies. Massively successful weekend. Then we'll have Associate Executive Director of the AutoZone Liberty Bowl, Harold Grader, on to talk about the college football playoff rankings, first round matchups, and Texas Tech and Arkansas. How about that? And the AutoZone Liberty Bowl. Excited about that game. David Cobb from CBS Sports will join me after that to continue our college football discussion. I'm going to ask him about the SEC and if they should begin to restructure their schedule after what we saw from the committee yesterday. And then after that, we'll get into Juan Soto and the most interesting NFL games of the weekend in the Blitz. Then we'll get out of here with small talk after that. I am joined, as always, by the Honorable King George, George Ruggiero. You can find him on Twitter at KingGeorge94. George, what a wild, chaotic weekend it was in sports.
Just all over the place. Upsets after upset after upset. We've had some crazy news across multiple different sports and locally. What a weekend.
Good locally, and bad. What a weekend. Good and bad. Good and bad. Before we get into the good and bad, real quick, I gotta get King George's thoughts. What'd you think of the committee? Thumbs up, thumbs down?
I'm going to give them
somewhere in the middle.
I'm going to give them probably somewhere in the middle, because on one hand, you know, and I was watching the selection show and there's all the discourse between Booger and Kirk and Saban, all having some level of almost venom to them. Like they were kind of going at each other a little bit. Like
it was unbelievable television. And it was a great idea to have Saban, because he was there to talk about Alabama, but you could cut the tension in the room with a knife. I thought it was fantastic.
They were in the same room, and you could cut it with a knife.
It was fantastic.
Incredible. I'm going to give them somewhere in the middle, I think, because on one hand, they very well, this could just be a rule going forward, I feel like. They could have just made it a whole lot easier on themselves going in and just making the rules for this a little better and saying, hey, just because you have an auto bid doesn't mean you have an auto buy. Just because, you know, this or that, or they could have made the ranking numbers make a little bit more sense, because it's like, okay, cool, why'd you guys give Clemson number 16, but they're actually number 12?
Right. Have some consistency.
Yeah.
I think the biggest lesson from yesterday was, you know, I think that I also land somewhere in the middle, but we need some more consistency across the board from team to team. What are you judging these teams on? Because it does feel like it changes from team to team, conference to conference. And when you get to a conference like the SEC, should it change from conference to conference? Maybe so. Maybe so. We'll talk more about that with Harold Grader coming up after the opening segment. But we got to jump into the Memphis loss to Arkansas State. It was a tough game. Arkansas State won 85-72. More first half woes for the Memphis Tigers. And I think this game is as simple as you got outplayed and unfortunately you got outcoached. You know, and I think it's as simple as that. The Memphis Tigers, in my opinion, were overlooking Arkansas State. They got a good but sloppy win against Louisiana Tech, and I think they probably told themselves, well, even if we play sloppy, we might be able to beat Arkansas State. We're looking forward to Clemson. You even heard Penny Hardaway talk about it in his post-game presser. You know, I will say kudos to Penny for taking responsibility and saying, I didn't have this team ready. I never in a million years did I think we were going to walk out there and lose to Arkansas State on our home court. Arkansas State's biggest upset in program history, beating a number 16 Memphis Tigers team. It felt like during the game, anytime the Tigers would go on a run, Arkansas State would just balloon that lead back up to 15. It was very frustrating watching the game because in that second half, Memphis did get much better with their defensive play. They weren't overhelping on the three-point line as much. That's what crushed them in the first half. It was just that overhelping. And you kind of saw it at the end of that UConn game. At the end of the UConn game, UConn was able to get back into that basketball game because the Tigers got a little bit tight on the defensive end. They were overhelping on the three-point line and leaving guys wide open. That's kind of what happened last night against Arkansas State in that first half. Second half looked much better, but the Tigers just didn't have enough to go get Arkansas State. It's a bad loss. It's definitely a bad loss. You don't want it. I think the biggest thing about it is it makes your margin of error smaller. And this is something that we've had to talk about with Penny Hardaway teams over the last few years. And I do think that we have to be careful about holding the sins of previous teams against basically a brand new team. Nicholas Jourdain is the only guy here, basically a brand new coaching staff too. So it's a fine line to walk when you talk about, well, are the woes from the past going to continue with this team? Is that going to continue? And last night you saw some warning signs of that. But ultimately, I'm still bullish on this Memphis Tigers team. And I do think that Penny taking responsibility last night in his press conference was helpful. That being said, the team not being in the presser,
It's a bad look.
It's something to keep an eye on. There are just a few warning signs starting to pop up. Nothing to panic about yet. But this is two straight games where the Memphis Tigers haven't looked like we know they could. And against Clemson, you can't come out in the first half and have those first half woes. You got to look like the Memphis Tigers do in the second half in the first half. Be that first half team. Have a complete game. Because when they have a complete game, they're a very good basketball team. But you're not going to be successful against teams like Clemson, Ole Miss, Mississippi State if you're having to fight your way back. You want to play with the lead.
And that's three out of your next four games. And for what it's worth, Virginia is not going to be an easy game either. One, it's on the road.
Yep.
And two, historically, again, this is a culture thing. They have a culture of being a very physical, very defensive basketball team. And at points, it seems like Memphis, it gets difficult for their guys to get theirs other than P.J. Haggerty, who seems like he's just an automatic bucket. But beyond him, when the going can get tough on the offensive side of the court, it kind of feels like they also tighten up a bit defensively because it feels like, oh, we can't make a mistake on the back end. Or it's not going anywhere. And that's, to me, that's what the first half really felt like to me. Offensively, they weren't getting it going. So they're like, okay, we have to really, really tighten up on the defensive end.
Mm-hmm.
And because they got so tight, they were making those mental errors, those mistakes at the three-point line like you're referring to. Because, man, Arkansas State in that first half, they were just bombing it from three. And they were nailing them.
They were. They were open shots and they were knocking them down. They had a great game plan. Really well-coached basketball team.
Absolutely.
Fundamentally sound. Well-coached, fundamentally sound. You know, that's why it's a bad loss for the Memphis Tigers, but I'm hesitant to overreact to it in any way. Because at the end of the day, you're not going to win many basketball games when you have 20 turnovers and 9 assists. And they just look lethargic coming out of it. There were warning signs pretty early on in that game. Uh-oh. Is this going to be a game that they drop?
Yeah.
You saw it a little bit in that Louisiana Tech game, but they were able to pull it out in that second half. I was hoping for a second-half run in this one, and they just didn't have it enough. You made it to the free-throw line 34 times. That's been a very big positive for the Memphis Tigers this season. They've been getting to the line. Dane Danger was 8 of 14. P.J. Haggerty was 11 of 13. Shot 67% as a team. Not going to get it done.
No.
Not going to get it done. You got some free points there. Now, ultimately, I just still don't think they would have won the game, even if you hit a couple more free throws. The Red Wolves were just the better team last night, and that's unfortunate when you're talking about how talented this Memphis Tigers team is. And like I said, that margin of error is now a little bit smaller. And with those big games coming up, this is an important stretch. Can you go 3-1 in this stretch? I think they may be able to. That'd be a big win for the Memphis Tigers. The good news is you've already got a lot of very good wins under your belt. A lot of quad one, quad twos. You already got that. You've protected yourself on the front end. But this type of loss just shrinks that margin of error just a little bit. So it's something to keep an eye on moving forward. Now, this is an interesting stat I found about college basketball.
Okay, I'm curious because
before we move on to the Grizzlies,
one thing with this that I've heard a bit of talk about has been the scheduling for Penny and this program. I don't think it's a bad thing. Leave the scheduling alone because think about it. La Tech, you got the win. They're slated or they're projected to win their conference.
Yep, Conference USA.
Same thing with Arkansas State. Right now, if I remember correctly, they're projected to win their respective conference. So having these tough tests isn't a bad thing. That can get you prepared for, okay, look, they see this game. They say, we got blitzed on this one. We did not play well in this game. How do we go about rectifying these issues? That can help them down the road in the American, where we all say, oh, there's going to be at least one slip up in the American. They're still probably going to, if they can win the tournament, which we think they all, we all think they can do, they can win their conference. But this is the type of game that they need to learn from and is a good learning experience, in my opinion.
I would rather them play this type of schedule, keep the non-con as is, and, you know, in the American, they should be able to take care of business. They should be. And like you said, this Arkansas State team, from what we've seen from the American this year, they're, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if they were, you know, not a terrible American team. It's Arkansas State isn't the worst team in the world. It's a bad loss by the Tigers, though. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. It's a bad loss. Can't drop this at home. Bad loss. There are some warning signs, but nothing to panic about yet.
Agreed.
Hopefully the Tigers can put it together and move forward. Penny said, we've got to stop spotting team points in the first half. They also shot under 20% in the first half on the offensive end.
That's just egregious.
That's a recipe for disaster. It's a recipe for an upset. It's a recipe for the biggest upset in program history for Arkansas State. And that is what happened to the Memphis Tigers. But here's this stat that I found. It's just an interesting one. It doesn't really have much to do with the Memphis Tigers, unfortunately. But the eventual national champion appeared in the Week 6 AP poll top 12 every year since 2003. Every single year since 2003.
That's this week, right?
Yes.
Okay.
So history tells us that one of these 12 teams will win the national championship. Tennessee, Auburn, Iowa, Iowa State, Duke, Kentucky, Marquette, Alabama, Gonzaga, Florida, Kansas, Purdue, Oregon. And today, Tennessee was ranked number one in the poll. Really good week for Tennessee.
Great
to the college football playoff. You ranked the men's and women's basketball. Baseball team won the national championship. Softball made it to super regionals. Really good year for Tennessee sports. Now, moving on to the Grizzlies. What a weekend for the Memphis Grizzlies.
Whew.
They have arrived in a big way. We've been saying all year, just wait. This team's going to go on a massive run. They're going to go on a massive run. Now, is this run part and because of a weak schedule? Yes. They have a pretty weak schedule right now. But good basketball teams take care of business when they have a weak schedule. And that is exactly what the Memphis Grizzlies are doing. They are 9-1 in their last 10. 9-1 in their last 10. Second in offense, seventh in defense, second in net rating. Chris Harrington found this stat. When John Morant, Desmond Bane, and Jaren Jackson Jr. are all available for a game, the Grizzlies are 6-1 with a plus 10 average point differential. Not surprising at all. When the Grizzlies have one of the best trios in the NBA on the floor together, they're usually going to win. And I think what's really important is, and we saw it against Boston, John Morant and Jaren Jackson Jr. can be the best players on the basketball court whenever they decide to be. And that's the story of the Celtics game. They dominated that game from the opening whistle until the end. It felt like one of those real, the Memphis Grizzlies are here to contend type of wins. It's the biggest one of the season. It's not even close. Damn near made up for the disaster that happened in the fourth quarter in Dallas. One of my favorite wins by the Grizzlies in a while. And I thought the strategy going into it was great. They basically said, Drew Holiday, you're going to have to beat us. You're going to have to beat us from three. They left him wide open. And what did he go, 4-for-17 from three?
Yes, 4-for-17 from three, which, and keep in mind, this is a good, really good three-point shooting Boston team. I mean, they were still 30% from three with, I mean, one person going, you know, 13 misses.
4-for-17. Drew Holiday's an excellent basketball player, but the Grizzlies had the right strategy going into it.
Oh, yeah.
Now, that being said, Jaylen Brown had a good basketball game. He had 22 points, 10-of-14. But the Grizzlies were able to get to him a little bit. He wasn't shooting the ball as much. I thought Jalen Wells played pretty good defense on him, but I don't know if you've noticed, Taylor Jenkins decided to close with Jake LaRavia. He wanted a bigger body on him, and Jake did a really good job. Jake did a great job. He's been closing the last few games with that lineup, and it is working very, very well. Jake LaRavia giving the Grizzlies some very good minutes right now. Jason Tatum struggled in this game, though. He was 6-of-21, 1-of-10 from 3, only had 17 points. And that's why, again, when you were watching the basketball game, what really stood out was John Morant's the best player on this court, and it's not really close. And you know who was the second best player on the court? Jaren Jackson Jr., and it wasn't really close. Desmond Bane struggled a little bit through the first three quarters, but showed up when it mattered in the fourth. You got another awesome performance from a guy like Santi Aldama, who has been huge. He didn't have big-time offensive numbers in the Boston game, but he was hit timely shots from Santi Aldama, as he always does. And then Brandon Clark, BC is back. BC is back in a big way. And it was great having Drew Hill on last week, because he talked about Brandon Clark, even though he had the strong finish to last season, he still felt like he needed the offseason and the beginning of the season. It's not just about healing your Achilles. It's about trusting it. And you can see over the last few games that Brandon Clark has trust in his leaping ability again. He has trust in his defensive ability again. And he is playing excellent minutes with Jaren Jackson Jr. Death taxes Jaren Jackson Jr. and Brandon Clark being great at basketball on the court together. They are one of the better duos in the NBA with the center power forward position. Brandon Clark allows Jaren Jackson Jr. to roam on the defensive end, turns him into a menace. Jaren Jackson Jr. was incredible on the defensive end against Boston. 4 blocks, 3 steals. Every single time you see somebody in the paint, they have to make a decision if Jaren Jackson Jr. is standing there. Should I go up? Do I have to pass the ball? You can see guys thinking when he pops out. I'll keep saying it. If Victor Wembanyama wasn't alive, I would say that Jaren Jackson Jr. would be the favorite for Defensive Player of the Year right now. I think that Jaren's playing at an all-star level, without a doubt. I think he's also playing at an all-NBA level. And as good as Ja Morant is, he's been unbelievable this season. He was phenomenal in the Boston game. One of the best games I've ever seen from Ja Morant. One of the best games I've ever seen from him. Him hitting those threes like that, I was like, oh my God.
Where'd this come from? Did you like the reporter asking him, I thought you weren't going to dunk again. Where'd that come from?
Yeah.
On the baseline.
Yeah, that was Rob. Yeah.
Pump in midair, reverse jam.
So that was one of the best dunks I've seen from Ja Morant. And it was so funny because when Rom asked him about it, he was like, I thought it was going to get blocked. I only did it because I thought that Kristaps Porzingis was going to block it. And it's just like, yeah, Ja Morant casually just does a double pump reverse dunk just because he thinks Kristaps Porzingis is there. He's one of those unbelievable players I've ever seen. I've never seen anything like it in a Memphis Grizzlies uniform. In a Memphis uniform. Like I said, the closest thing I think that we've gotten is Derrick Rose. But every time you watch Ja, I'm just like, how is this guy this good at basketball? It's crazy.
It's ridiculous. And to your point with Jaren, it's not just that he's almost always, 90% of the time, he is the biggest and the strongest player on the court at all times. In this case, defensively, he did a great job on a guy like Kristaps, who can really play the 5 or the 4, really, at a bunch of different places on the court. He's great from the perimeter. He's a very good 3-point shooter. He was well defended in this game, only was 3 of 10 from 3. And Ja's reasoning is perfectly valid. I mean, KP had 3 blocks.
KP's great.
He's a very good basketball player.
And while you're watching the game, you can't help but think to yourself, could this be an NBA Finals preview? Because it felt like it.
Playoff atmosphere.
And I'll also say, I would like to thank Ja Morant and Jaren Jackson Jr. and Desmond Bane for his clutch play and Brandon Clark for showing up. So we didn't have to endure Marcus Smart discourse from this game. Because Marcus was rough from the offensive end.
Yeah, not great.
He was much better last night against the Wizards, which we'll get to here in just a second. But Marcus Smart's finally got his ovation in Boston, the heart and soul of that team for many years. It is unfortunate that he was never able to get a ring there with that team, and that the year that they traded him away, they ended up winning. Now, that being said, if you can get Kristaps Porzingis and Drew Holiday, and you have to pay the price of Marcus Smart, you have to do it.
It's kind of a no-brainer.
But I'm glad that he finally got the love from the Boston Celtics fans because he deserves it. He was the heart and soul of that team for a long time. And just didn't have it on the offensive end in this game, but that's okay. Showed up defensively in a few moments. I still think that having this gritty veteran on a team is going to bode well for the Grizzlies in the future. But overall, just one of the best wins I've seen in the Taylor Jenkins era. I really do think that it's one of the best in the Taylor Jenkins era, because not only did you have Ja Morant and Jaren Jackson Jr. looking like two of the best players in the NBA against the defending champions, you saw some adjustments from Taylor Jenkins on the fly that were very encouraging. People have asked Taylor Jenkins, we need you to coach with feel over the last few weeks. Well, I think if you were watching that game, it certainly felt like he was coaching with feel. John Morant closed the third quarter. Jaren Jackson Jr., I'm pretty sure, played the entire fourth quarter, damn near played the entire fourth quarter. John Morant got big minutes. It was their most minutes of the season. And it felt like one of those games where, listen, go win that basketball game. Play your stars. Trust your stars. And your stars took care of business at the end of that game. Very, very encouraging win for the Memphis Grizzlies. And that's why when you have a win like that and you're heading to play a team like the Wizards the next night, you can be worried about a hangover. The Memphis Grizzlies were not hungover last night, did not have John Morant, did not have Desmond Bane, and beat the living crap out of the Wizards. Absolute domination against the Wizards. Cam Spencer got some Cam Spencer minutes. Santi Aldama was massive in that game. And I was having an interesting conversation with some of my friends last night.
Mm-hmm.
Most improved player. We've completely lost the plot of what the most improved player award should be. When you're looking at a player like Santi Aldama and the leap that he has taken for the Memphis Grizzlies, he seems like the type of player that should win the most improved.
You would think.
Not a guy that's already scored 20 game plus points a game. Like Jalen Williams, like, yeah, he's great. Is he the most improved player in the NBA? No.
No, he was a stud before.
He was a stud before, borderline all-star. But a player like Santi Aldama, who has been critical to the Memphis Grizzlies this season, and they're winning. Highest true shooting percentage by a bench player this season in the NBA. Minimum 90 field goal attempts. Number one, kind of surprising, A.J. Green. Surprising, 77.8%. Santi Aldama, 69.4%. Number two in the NBA. And just for fun, who do you think's number three?
We talked about it before, so I do know the answer. But it is still crazy. Who, keep in mind, he also had a fantastic game in Washington.
He certainly did.
And that's Mr. Jay Huff.
What a pickup by the Memphis Grizzlies.
17 points.
I think that he is on
24 minutes.
He has had double-digit scoring in, I think, about four games in a row, maybe five in a row.
He did in Boston. He did last night. I'm not sure about the Sacramento game or the Dallas game.
The Grizzlies are rolling right now. They are the strongest in the paint, too, which is exciting because the Grizzlies can beat you in a few different ways. And I think that is one of the reasons their offense has been so effective this year. Is it still relying a lot on the pace? Yeah. They're second in the NBA in pace. Maybe third. Second, I believe.
I think it's second.
Second
or third. It's definitely top five. And at the very least, the thing with pace...
Yeah, they're second, 104.6. They're second NBA pace.
The thing with pace is that is a style thing. That's a culture thing.
Yeah.
That's sustainable.
Well, what's exciting about it is they showed in that Boston game they can beat you in a few different ways. When the game got slower, their stars stepped up. John Morant was hitting shots in the paint. Jaren Jackson Jr. was stepping out for a three. Desmond Bane had a couple mid-range shots that were big time. They can beat you in a few different ways. Right now, the Memphis Grizzlies are the only team in the NBA, the only team that ranks top seven on both ends of the floor. They are seventh in defensive rating at 108.5 and fifth in offensive rating at 116.5. They're doing everything right now. They're beating teams that they should. They're stepping up in big games against the Boston Celtics. They've tripped up once in the last 10 games, and unfortunately, it was in a massive game against the Dallas Mavericks in the fourth quarter. Left a bad taste in your mouth. But this weekend, they went out there and they took care of business, and they are now second in the West. The Memphis Grizzlies are second in the West. Oh, and by the way, you still haven't gotten a ton of games with the trio.
No, well, what would you say, seven?
Seven. You still haven't gotten games from G.G. Jackson or Vince Williams Jr. Zach Edey's been out for a while. You have guys and reinforcements coming back soon. This Memphis Grizzlies team is going to be one to reckon with in the NBA. Stay the course. I was very pleased with the rotations this weekend. Like I said, it felt like the complaint the last few weeks have been coaching with feel, and I thought he coached with feel against Boston. And then the Wizards, we could have all coached that game with feel. It was one of the easiest games I've ever seen a coach have. It was funny because in that third quarter, it felt like, the Wizards might try to make this interesting. Taylor Jenkins called timeout, huddled him up, 16 straight by the Grizzlies, and it was just a beatdown.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Now,
140 to 112. I mean,
it would be disrespectful if we closed this segment without talking about one player, though. Yuki.
I need to find this.
Yuki.
I know where to find
this. What an ovation he got in Washington. A bigger ovation than any of the Washington Wizards got from their own fan base. the Memphis Grizzlies fans took over that arena, and Washington fans were chanting for Yuki with 6 minutes left to go in the fourth quarter. 5 minutes of Yuki was absolutely electric television. When a sleepy game like that happened and you get the shot of Yuki in, oh, it was fantastic. Then he hit a step back over who? Marvin Bagley. Retire, Marvin Bagley. Yuki owns you. Owns you. Hit a step back in your face.
Can I play this?
Absolutely, you can play it. You would think that was a Grizzlies game winner in the FedEx Forum. That was a three-point shot by Yuki when the Grizzlies were already up by like 25. Absolutely electric.
Awesome.
One of my favorite stories in the NBA. And I think that Pete put it beautifully last night when he was talking about Yuki and why he thinks Memphis fans have embraced him so much. This is a city that embraces people who work hard for what they believe in, work hard for their dreams. And when you can see that effort, you can see that hustle, a city like Memphis is going to embrace you. And Yuki has embraced Memphis. And it certainly is a love affair. So much fun.
You can see it in his teammates, too.
It's incredible.
Every single time, whether he's playing or not, whether he's just like, whether it's a game where you know he's not coming in, either he played in South Haven the night before or earlier that day, every single member of that team looks like they have genuine love for Yuki. The other one who actually played you said Cam Spencer, he got 25 minutes in that game.
Yep.
He played a big role. Colin Castleton played pretty well. He had some nice minutes out there.
Yeah, not bad.
It wasn't bad for a guy that, out of the rookies, you know, we haven't seen or heard much of at all. He had some nice minutes.
He wasn't bad. All right. Next up, we're going to have the Associate Executive Director of the AutoZone Liberty Bowl, Harold Grader, on. Talk about the college football playoff and the AutoZone Liberty Bowl. Stick around. Listen to Connor Dunning on the Gabe Kuhn Show on 929 FM, ESPN. Welcome back to the Gabe Kuhn Show. This is Connor Dunning filling in for Gabe Kuhn while he is out. I am now joined by the Associate Executive Director of the AutoZone Liberty Bowl, Harold Grader. You can find him on X at Harold Grader. Harold, pretty exciting weekend for college football.
That is an understatement, Connor. It was like off the charts crazy. And, you know, I think when they decided to go from 4 to 12 in the playoff, this kind of interest, excitement, maybe a little bit of chaos was what they had in mind. And a lot of eyeballs on those championship games because of how they were potentially impacting, ultimately did impact the playoffs and the entire bowl ecosystem. Good stuff this weekend. Depending on your perspective, if you're an Alabama person, maybe not so much.
Right. Alabama and Ole Miss, they seem pretty upset by it. Miami, I think that they have some sour grapes about the situation. But it was interesting because on, you know, championship weekend, nothing too surprising happened at first. You know, Boise State won. You know, Georgia beat Texas, and that wasn't too surprising. And then that ACC championship game, I don't think anybody saw a 56-yard field goal coming to cause chaos throughout the landscape of college football. I don't think the committee thought it was coming because, in their opinion, like you said, they had a really exciting season. Eyeballs were on the last weekend of the season. The games felt like they mattered, but it also felt like you were going to get the bigger brands in it. Everybody was kind of going to be happy across the board, and then, boom, chaos ensues.
Oh, indeed. And, you know, I was in Dallas at the Big 12 championship game, so we're watching all these games or following them on our phones. And, you know, the thought process was SMU wins and then Alabama's in, right?
Right.
Clemson loses. What happened. And, you know, early on, I mean, you know, Clemson was taking them to the woodshed.
They really were. Early. It was that fourth quarter comeback.
Indeed. So kudos and credit to SMU to come back. And then I look at those last 15 seconds or so after SMU scores. Everybody say, okay, we're going to overtime.
Right.
Left a little too much time on the clock, and then the return on the kick. I mean, that's when you're – not going to put it off on their kicker or their kickoff guy, but that you got to put the ball through the end zone.
Oh, absolutely.
So there is no return.
Absolutely.
And so big return, one pass, bingo, 56 yards, chaos.
Chaos ensues. Let's start with the SEC championship game, though.
Yeah.
Did you learn anything from that game? Because the biggest thing that I saw was I just don't know if Texas is going to be able to step up in the college football playoff. And I think that Georgia is a bit of a sleeping giant. I know that Carson Beck got injured in that game, but this season I also thought that he was one of the weaker points for Georgia. So I think that what I learned from the game was don't sleep on Georgia. They've had a weird season, but I think that in the college football playoff, they could be something to reckon with.
Yeah, I mean, you got to look at the overall program. Obviously, multiple national championships, stability in that program with Kirby Smart and what he has built there. You can never, to use your phrase, go to sleep on Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be a player. They're going to be a factor. Obviously, Carson Beck, his health situation is a big question. But Gunnar Stockton stepped in there, and I got to tell you, I thought he actually gave Georgia a spark.
He did.
So it's weird how things work out. If Beck doesn't get hurt, does Georgia perform at the level they ultimately played at? I think Stockton gave them a little bit of fire there and really was a positive for them. Will Beck be back at 100%? And we'll see. But for Stockton and his personal situation and for the Georgia program, they know, hey, if we need to, we can put this guy in the ballgame and still perform at a high level.
Absolutely. It was odd when you look at it for Texas, though, because they had 358 yards through the air. They were only able to put up 19 points. It felt like every single time they had an opportunity, they were never able to capitalize on it.
Yeah, Connor. And I think for me, the stat that really jumped out was their inability to run the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And that comes to line play and execution. They had, according to the numbers that I scribbled down late last night, 28 carries, 31 yards.
31 yards, average 1.1 per carry.
You can't win a game, much less a championship, if you can't run the ball. So looking at the Texas situation, major red flag right there.
Absolutely. Moving into the college football playoff rankings.
Yeah.
Do you agree with most people's sentiment that the SEC should have gotten a bit more attention in the college football playoff because of the strength of schedule?
To an extent, Connor, I would say you had those 9-3s sitting there,
mm-hmm.
and you knew all of them weren't going to make it. So which of those three? And when you look at it, at the end of the day, for me, Alabama should have gotten the nod over those three. They didn't get the nod to make the playoff field. And I'm seeing, you know, both sides of that dilemma for folks. Alabama, you want to be in there. Don't lose to Vandy. Don't lose to Oklahoma.
Right.
You want to be there. On the plus side for them is strength of schedule. And I put a lot of value in strength of schedule. And, you know, and I've said this here for the last few weeks, is I have really struggled with SMU and Indiana. Yes, they played the schedule they were given. They had great success. But I still struggle with the issue of strength of schedule. And for me, Alabama, three top 25 wins, trumps Indiana and SMU in those conversations. But it all goes back to go win. Don't put yourself in that situation where your fate is in the committee's hands versus go win and you're in. It's easy. It's a layup that you're in there. So I think it's an opportunity for Alabama to do some self-evaluation. I think as Nick Saban was famous for saying, never miss the opportunity to take advantage of a failure.
Right.
This is certainly on the Alabama scale of success. This is not a successful year. Now, they still have a chance to go to the bowl game and have another 10-win season and keep that streak alive. But the bigger picture of the playoff, go win, and I think this might be a positive for DeBoer and his program to kind of not necessarily hit the reset button, but to give them the ability to say, look what happened to us. We've got to focus on every meeting, every practice, every play. We've got to get to the standard, play to the standard, execute to the standard in every single thing we do if we want to get to where we want to be, and that is a playoff team, and not have it be what we just experienced. So an opportunity for Alabama to turn a huge negative into a positive.
It was fascinating to have Nick Saban on the show to be able to break down the situation with Alabama. I when I was watching that, I was like, I don't know if there's better college football television than this right now. And I don't know if I disagree with people when they say that if Saban was still the head coach of Alabama, they probably get the benefit of the doubt a little bit more than they did with DeBoer, even though I still believe that he's a good head coach. But right. I just think that Saban effect would have come into play with the committee.
Still, I mean, you're talking about the legend.
He's the greatest. The greatest that has ever been on the college football field. Do you think that the SEC is going to have a response to this year's college football playoff with how they handled their schedule?
Yeah, and that's certainly out there, and that's certainly a possibility. I know Greg Byrne, the AD at Alabama, already came out and said, you know, maybe we need to take a look at the schedule, the non-conference schedule. The other side of that is, if that happens and teams dumb down their schedules, that's not what we all want college football to be.
Right.
Whether you're a bowl guy like me, a TV executive with Disney, which is ABC, ESPN, or just a fan, you want to see great college football games. So we'll see what happens there. And I can tell you another factor in conversations, murmurings that are happening, because I heard it in Dallas, and I think this was, I'm hearing, was discussed or at least bannered about at some of the other conference championship games, is do conference championship games can continue? So we'll see. Now, I don't think anything is going to change for 25 with the playoff. I don't think. They'll meet and talk about that at the national championship game. But then when the new cycle starts in 2026, I think very likely we'll see some tweaks, changes to the playoff system.
And that's why this entire conversation is difficult, because I understand both sides of it, where the strength of schedule should absolutely matter. Who you play should matter.
Yes.
At the same time, the beauty of college sports is you might have a Cinderella and the little guy still gets to play with the big boys every once in a while in the playoff. And that's why I'm excited to see teams like Boise State in this playoff. I think the Arizona State story is one of the better ones in college football. But I also fear what the television product is going to be in these games. I hope that they're close ones, but we've also seen the last few years in the college football playoff, whether it's four teams or 12, we usually have some blowouts on our hands.
Yeah, and before we move on to the bowls and all of that stuff, you mentioned Arizona State. I want to give a shout-out to Kenny Dillingham.
What a story.
At Arizona
Incredible.
State. Great win, impressive win, no doubt about it who the better team was on Saturday. That's the game I was at in Dallas, the Big 12 championship game, Arizona State, Iowa State, Scataboo for the running back for Arizona State, impressive. But Kenny, can't say enough about the success he's having there, the way he's turned that program around from 3-9 to now Big 12 champion. Spot in the playoff, had a chance to visit with Kenny and his wife after the game briefly on Saturday. So happy for him and the success he's having. And, again, shout out to them as another former Tiger coach having success as a head coach.
It's I talk to Gabe about it all the time. That Memphis staff that included all of these guys, it's unbelievable. Because at the time, we knew that it was a great thing to have and a rare thing to have. But to look up now and see some of them in the college football playoff exact same time and signing new contracts, and it just seems like everywhere you look, if there's success in college football, there's a Memphis Tiger somewhere around it.
Kudos to Mike Norvell. He had put together just an incredible staff. And, you know, that's part of what makes Mike special. This season aside for Florida State, I think he'll get things figured out and turned around down there. But, that was one of the all-time great college staffs here at Memphis back in the Norvell days.
One last question for you about the seeding and the teams that got in before we get into the actual games of the college football playoff. A lot of people have been saying that Texas got a bit of an easy ranking and an easy pathway in the college football playoff, and they may not have deserved it. What do you make of that?
You know, I can't argue a whole lot with that point.
Right.
Because my basic position is I agree. So not a whole lot to debate there. But again, that's the system. And somebody with the way it was playing out, with the group of five, you know, getting a bye, you know, that something like that was going to happen.
Right.
And that's just the hand they were dealt, and it's a favorable one.
Our first round college football playoff matchups. The first one is going to be on Friday, December 20th. We have Indiana at Notre Dame. That's going to be at 8 p.m. Eastern time. Indiana, I understand why a lot of people have some gripes about them being in the college football playoff, given who they had to play. And when they actually played, quote-unquote, big-time competition, it was not a very good game to watch. Do you expect us to see something similar against Notre Dame, or do you think that Notre Dame, given who they played this season, may be susceptible to an upset?
They very well could be.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to pick Notre Dame to win the game. It's at their place. But it's two in-state teams. So it's not like Indiana is making this long cross-country trip.
Right.
But it's down the road for them. So the dynamics of all of that are going to be interesting. You know, Notre Dame is good, but not in all cases all-powerful, where they just know, hey, we're gonna show up and we're going to roll over you. So I think this will be a competitive game, but just because it's at Notre Dame, I'm going to give the edge to the Fighting Irish.
Saturday, December 21st, that's the big day for the first round. We're going to have SMU at Penn State. That is an interesting game because I expect Penn State to win. It's at their place.
Yeah.
But you do have that James Franklin in a big football game factor also hanging over that first-round playoff game.
You sure do. I think SMU will come in there. Give a very competitive game. But at the end, I think that Penn State figures out a way to win at home just because it's at home. I agree with you.
Clemson at Texas. That one's going to be interesting because I do think that this is two teams that have been a bit inconsistent this season. Clemson's had some very low moments, but they've also had some very high highs, one including the ACC championship. To be quite honest, they're probably surprised as we are that they're in the college football playoff this year. And Texas, we just discussed it, have had a bit of an easier schedule in the SEC than most, and they haven't really been able to step up in the bigger games this season when they've needed to. So I expect Texas to win this football game, but I would not be shocked if Clemson was able to catch them.
I'll disagree a bit there.
Okay.
For Texas, they've got to be able to run the ball. Ewers has got to play at a high level. Translation, no turnovers.
Mm-hmm.
Passing at a completion at a high level. Clemson, I think their clock has run out.
You think so?
They blew their wad.
It hit midnight.
And yes. Their ultimate game was the AC championship.
Mm-hmm.
They had the fortune now to play, to be in the first 12-team playoff. They're rolling into DKR there in Austin. It's all Longhorns, and I hope Clemson enjoys their trip to Austin in the Hill Country of Texas, because I expect it to be no more than that.
Next up, it's the game that I'm the most worried about because I'm a Tennessee football fan, and even though we had a successful season, I was upset that we were gifted a first-round playoff matchup against Ohio State at Ohio State. I think that Tennessee is a talented football team this year, but I think that Ohio State is the most talented team in the country, and I do think that they are looking to prove a point after their upset against Michigan. So even though I want Tennessee to give them a good football game, I expect Ohio State to take down the Vols.
I would think so, certainly, as you mentioned, the loss to Michigan. So Ohio State's got a chip on their shoulder, pressure on the coach. Again, like we always talk about, James Franklin never seems to come through in the big game,
mm-hmm.
quote-unquote. Well, here is the ultimate big game for Ohio State. They got to win. The pressure's on the coach. It's a night game in Columbus. Not that it doesn't get cold in Knoxville, but I don't think it gets what potentially the weather could be like, night game in Columbus on December 21st.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Ohio State is the better team. And I expect them to get the win at home.
Moving on to bowl season.
Yeah.
We had a very exciting announcement from the AutoZone Liberty Bowl. Texas Tech 8-4 versus Arkansas 6-6, December 27th at 7 p.m.
Yeah, we're excited about it. Arkansas and Texas Tech, two teams that want to be here, fan bases that are excited about the opportunity to come to Memphis. And in the bowl world, Connor, that is a huge consideration. Teams that want to be at the bowl destination as opposed to, we'll go through the motions, we'll show up, we'll take the bowl gifts, we'll play the game and then head home. That is not the case with these two football teams. Obviously, for the Razorbacks, their expectations for the year were higher still. Had the marquee win over Tennessee, playoff team we just talked about. On the other side, with Texas Tech, they beat both of the teams that played in the Big 12 championship. They beat Iowa State. They beat Arizona State. So both of these football teams have some marquee wins in the year. So we're excited about the opportunity to have both of these teams back in Memphis. Their fan bases are great. We know they're looking forward to the matchup on the football field.
Oh, absolutely.
It's a throwback to the old Southwest Conference days. Joey McGuire, the head coach at Texas Tech, is from Texarkana, Texas. He was telling the story about his family. He grew up as a Razorback fan. His family had season tickets. So just that dynamic makes it an interesting story. And we're looking forward to it. We invite you to be a part of it. It's Friday the 27th, 6 o'clock kickoff. Lots going on, our usual lineup of festivities and activities. Come, be a part of it, whether you're a Razorback or you're a Red Raider. If you're a college football fan, come on, join us and be a part of it and enjoy one of our city's marquee events.
It is absolutely one of the marquee events. I enjoy being there every single year. And it is an exciting football game. It's two talented teams that have been through ups and downs. Look, you said Texas Tech had some of the highest moments of the college football season. And Arkansas, it's an interesting one because I've always been a fan of Sam Pittman, and I think he's done enough to stick around for another season. I just hope that that team can continue to improve because I just feel like he is the type of coach that can get it done for you. He just hasn't been able to maximize the talent.
Yes, I would agree with that assessment. And Pittman is going to be back next year.
Mm-hmm.
Bobby Petrino is going to be back next year. He dipped his toe into the waters this past week or so with some job openings, but ultimately he's back running that Arkansas offense. We'll see how active they are in the transfer portal. You know, fill some holes, get a couple of fixes here and there, and Arkansas is a competitive football team.
Harold, thank you so much.
Connor, thank you. We're looking forward to it, folks. It's bowl season. Enjoy. Here we go.